We got one guest for this Monday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going all right, man. Had a good weekend. Good weekend on my plays. Nice weekend overall, getting to spend a little bit of time with family. Sounds like I'm doing a little bit better than you are today.
Yeah, I would say so. But you know what? The show must go on. And like I said, we didn't have a Monday show last week, so I didn't want to deprive our listeners of back-to-back Mondays. So soldiering through it and doing the best I can to get the program out here today. And before we start with the notes that you sent over for today's show, you know, one of the nice things about doing the Monday mailbag is that I sometimes get questions from our listeners that we can carry over to our other segments here throughout the week on Bang the Book Radio. And I had a question today about key numbers in college basketball. What's your take? What's your thought process on those?
Yeah, obviously key numbers in college basketball are nearly as key as, you know, key numbers in football. But I've always thought that 3 and 5 were really key numbers in college basketball. You know, that's where everybody's going to foul at the end of the game in college basketball if you're sitting on, you know, 1 point with 5 seconds left and you're losing and the other team has the ball. You get to about, you know, 5 points and there's a very small amount of time left. That's where sometimes it'll stop. But, you know, I think that we need to keep in mind that key numbers in college basketball are not worth buying to. You know, really, they're not worth buying to in college football either, and rarely in the NFL. So I think that that's the most important thing I'd say is that, you know, when I say a key number, I'm not telling you to buy to a certain number, and I don't think that's worth it at all. 3, I think, is the most important number. 5, 2, 4 also. I think 7 is a more important number in the NBA than it is in college basketball, if I remember looking at the data right. But, you know, those would be the ones that would be in my top 5 there, would be 3, 2, 5, 4, 7. You know, once you get bigger than that, it's obviously going to happen less. But 1 also happens a lot less than what you would think. So 1 is not nearly as key of a number as 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, and largely, I think it's one of those things where, you know, you just want to you just be on the right side of the key number. You want to be under the key number if you're betting a favorite and over the key number if you're betting an underdog and get that hook. Shop around for that hook. I think that's one of the most important things you can do.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about it from shopping around to get the extra half point, then I'm totally in agreement, and I think that's really important. I think that, you know, the more times that you get that extra hook, it's going to make a big difference. You know, think about how many of these games finish close to what the line is. You know, if you're sweating out games consistently in college basketball, you know a lot of these games finish both close to the spread and the total. The odds makers are good at what they do. If you only have 1 out and you're getting beat by half point consistently, then you could probably be doing better than you are. So I think that's probably the big takeaway from this. And yeah, I would say that 3 is by far the most important number in college basketball, but it's not like it is in college football or the NFL by any means.
So one more college basketball question. Then I want to ask you a very interesting question our good friend Rich Lammons sent to me here. But this one coming from Jason via email says, what method do you use to determine how a pace battle is going to pan out? Say both teams are fairly even, but play at completely different paces. I think you and I will probably have about the same answer for this one, but I am curious to get your thoughts.
Well, I like to look at history and see if that team, you know, which team is consistently able to impose their will on the other team. And I think that this is something where you can look at past games to see, you know, has this team been able to slow the other team down? Has this team been able to speed the other team up? And you find some teams that tend to want to slow the game down, but they're not able to slow a fast-paced, good team down. On the other hand, you're going to find some teams like a Wisconsin or a Virginia or somebody like that. Nobody's playing fast against them. They're not letting it happen. So I think that, you know, history shows that pretty well. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, if you're a team that goes slow, the biggest thing that you need to look for is whether they turn the ball over, because usually the faster paced teams are doing something pressing or using some trapping, trying to get quick turnovers and easy scores. if you're the slower paced team, you want to be able to take care of the basketball, because if you can't hold on to the ball, that's the quickest way for the other team to speed it up. So I think that, you know, and the question you said that it would be even teams. And the other thing I would say is if they're not even teams, usually the better team will be able to do that. And then the final thing I would say is that home team controls the tempo a little bit more than the road team on average. So if all other things are equal, then the home team tends to get the pace that they like.
Yeah, and something else I was kind of mentioning too is that, you know, you can look at how that team did against a team with a comparable pace in an earlier meeting
right.
that season and see, you know, if they played at the other team's pace or if they were able to play at their pace. And not that that's foolproof, because I think coaching goes into the equation here as well, where, you know, the better coaches, their teams are going to dictate pace more often than not, or you know, the better coaches just have the talent and say, you know what, we can play at any pace.
Right, right. There are some teams that are like that. I've always said that, a tough one for me is Michigan State. You know, Michigan State, I've gotten beat quite a few times in totals in the past because they can play either way, and they will play either way depending on what Izzo thinks is the best thing for them to do against that given opponent. So I don't feel like they trend as much as some of the other teams. They play faster in the non-conference and then slow down in the conference. But some of those conference games, they'll pick up the pace and really push it. A lot better than you would think based on their recent trends. You know, some other teams, you know, you can see how they're going to play almost every single game. I think that the better teams who are, you know, up and down as far as tempo are probably the hardest teams to bet totals on, because you just don't really know what to expect because they don't care. You know, they're good either way. A lot of the other teams, you know, they have a specific way that they're going to play. So I would look for consistency more than anything else. You know, look at every single game. You can track it on KenPom. You can track it on Bart Torvik. Both Torvik has a great graph as far as, you know, what tempo has been each game. And I like to look at that line graph to see, you know, where the tempo has been as compared to their season average. So that way you can also look for recent changes in pace.
All right, so one other Monday mailbag question I wanted to ask you about here, and this one comes from our friend Rich Lammons. It says, sportsbooks have been very profitable long-term by trying to have equal action on both sides. They don't try to take a side. They try to have equal action. In this ever-changing industry, do you think there will ever be a time where books start to take a side on certain games, leaving them exposed to a big loss or a potential huge gain? I think it's a pretty interesting question to see if, you know, a future sports book is willing to gamble a little bit more than most of them currently do.
I think so. I think somebody will. I wouldn't say the majority of them will. I think most people will still be trying to get the equal action on each side the best they can. I think that, you know, the fact that somebody will do that a little bit more than others, I think that's probably pretty likely. You know, a more aggressive sports book that feels like, you know, they really have set a good line, or, you know, they have some kind of information that makes them really like a certain side there. I think that's certainly possible. I do think that that'll be rare compared to the average book. You know, all it takes is one time of being really aggressive with the line and you lose a lot of money. And it would be pretty quick that, you know, the people above you and everybody that owns that book are sitting there going, man, we exposed ourselves to a lot of losses. I don't think it would take too many times before most people would get pretty nervous about that. So, I mean, because they're getting a lot of action. And I guess it depends also what sport it is and what the handle would be, because, you know, if you gamble too much on an NFL spread or something, or think that you're going to be, I mean, you're in real trouble then. So, you know, it depends on what the sport is. I would say some of the smaller sports, it would be easier to do that. But I think that that will be rare, but I kind of hope that we see that a little bit, because I always think it's nice to see somebody, you know, stick to their numbers.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see somebody kind of break the norm. And, you know, as I mentioned when I was answering that question, I think the idea of getting a North American betting exchange, which we should have at some point here with legalization, I think that's probably more of what we see in the future in terms of, you know, something that breaks the status quo. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, and there are sportsbooks that do it to a degree where they'll sort of take the sharp action and then, you know what they have going on and maybe take something of a smaller position. But to take a really big one-sided position, that's something I think we're a long way away from, if at all.
Yeah, I agree on the betting exchange, and I think that's something that's needed. I mean, those are very, very helpful, and, you know, then just market-based and, you know, supply and demand type situation. And, you know, obviously, I think that most sports books are going to stay what they have been, and most sports books are going to, you know, just look at their ticket count and dollar count and try to adjust as is. But I think, you know, as far as the question, I think somebody will probably do that a little bit more than they do now. Like Adam just said, there are some that do it a little bit right now. I don't think it's very prominent, and I don't think that it will be very prominent anytime soon. But, you know, if there's somebody that does that, I'd certainly like to see it, because I, like I said, I think that that would be pretty interesting for the industry.
I will say that, you know, maybe it's a little bit more likely with an entity like a DraftKings or a FanDuel, because it does seem like thus far those places have gotten a lot of public action. And if you're a book that gets a lot of public action, I think you'd be more willing to take some stronger stances than if you're a book that welcomes and embraces sharp action. So maybe it could be, you know, something that does come down the line a little bit, to where one of those entities like a DraftKings or a FanDuel realize, you know what, the public, and we all know this, and you know, not to discourage our listeners at all, but the public as a whole loses more often than it wins. So if you have a very public book like a DraftKings or FanDuel or Bovada or something like that, maybe they would be the ones to sort of break that mold and possibly, you know, look to be a little bit more exposed and get some of those bigger wins. The problem, obviously, is if the public side comes through, well, you take a bath on that game.
Right. I mean, I think that they are in a better position to try to do it. I mean, you know, like you just said, the fact of the matter is most people lose. And, you know, I don't think that should be discouraging people who listen to this, because I think that people who are listening to Bang the Book Radio have a lot better chance of winning than everybody else. I mean, they're getting information that other people aren't using. You know, they're not just saying, okay, it's Duke, it's North Carolina, I'll take them. You know, that's what a lot of people are doing. If they want to watch a game and that, you know, their favorite team or big name team is on, so they have to lay the points with them no matter what. If you're doing that, you're going to lose no matter what long term. And that's not what's going on with Bang the Book Radio listeners, I don't think. So, yeah, I agree with you that, you know, a book that's getting public action, heavy public action, it would be easier for them to do. But like you said, you know, in one given game, they could lose a lot of money doing that. So I think they'll be fairly cautious.
All right, so we get into our usual talking points here. And again, as I said, with the Monday mailbag, I will carry over those questions throughout the week with our different guests. So please keep sending those at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com. Let's talk Southland, one of the lowest of the low major conferences here. Not a ton to talk about, but it's in the sense that some of the teams that were pretty good in the past are really not showing all that well this year.
Yeah, we're used to Stephen F. Austin being the class of this conference, and they were picked to be the winner of this conference before the season, and that's not how it's gone. So Stephen F. Austin just 13-11 and only 6-6 in the conference. Sam Houston State at 12-1, they just lost their first game in the conference this past Saturday. They've had quite a few close games, but this is the Sam Houston State team that's been trending in the right direction the last few seasons. And now, you know, they have a veteran roster, and here they are at 18-5 ATS. You know, obviously, there's probably not too many people that have been betting on Southland games, but if somebody was on Sam Houston State, they were on a heck of an ATS run until the other day. So this is a Sam Houston State team that might be getting a little bit of attention now, but I have to say, I think the South is so far under the radar, and it's such a weak conference overall. I would say probably the only weaker conference that we've talked about thus far is probably the SWAC. Southland, you know, the thing that stands out to me about this conference is the top four teams in the league rank in top four, first through fourth, in defensive efficiency. So, you know, that defense is important here. You get a lot of teams that play pretty slow in this league. You're going to have quite a few close games. Not too many pace wars here. There's certainly some teams that'll push the pace a little bit. You know, when you look at a team like Northwestern State, a team like New Orleans, but Central Arkansas also. But a lot of these teams are playing fairly slowly, and you know, it's there's close games. The defense matters quite a bit, and you know, if you look at a team like Stephen F. Austin, why are they struggling this year compared to past years? Stephen F. Austin has been really inconsistent on the offensive end. You've got a Stephen F. Austin team that is averaging less than 1 point per possession in the conference. So certainly effective field goal percentage is 48.2%. So they've been really weak here on offense. And in the past year, they're really good on offense and getting a lot of offensive rebounds. They have not been at all this year. Sam Houston State, the other thing that stands out to them about me, they're very good at taking care of the basketball. You know, you get a lot of low-scoring close games or slow-paced close games. You're going to have a couple things be pretty important, defense and turnovers. And Sam Houston State has excelled in those areas this season. They also force a lot of turnovers. So it seems pretty clear that they're the class of the field. Abilene Christian has been good also this year, but if you look at Abilene Christian, I'm concerned that their strength of schedule is 346. I don't think that they've played the same type of schedule some of these other teams in the conference have.
Well, and something that's interesting here is I'm looking over on Torvik's website at the 32 conferences that are out there for college basketball. The Southland Conference, number one in turnover percentage on defense and number 32 in turnover percentage on offense. So as you were saying, you know, this is just a very poor offensive conference, to say the least.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed them to be first in turnovers on offense. I would have guessed the SWAC to be that, but I assume the SWAC is pretty close up there, right?
Yeah, it looks like the SWAC is... Yeah, the SWAC is second, so they're actually right behind, 21.4% to 21.2%. So very, very close, and the SWAC also, you know, obviously very good on the turnover percentage defense side because the teams just throw the basketball away. So you know, not a real pretty conference to look at by any means. So Sam Houston State is the top team. How do you sort of rank the rest of the pack here in this one-bid league?
I think Abilene Christian's a little bit overvalued here. The 21-5, 10-3. I would have Southeastern Louisiana as the second best team, or at least you know second most likely team to win this conference tournament, in my opinion. So we'll be talking about that again before too long. But Southeastern Louisiana, the thing that stands out to me about them is they underachieved early in the year. They're coming on of late. They're definitely trending in the right direction. They have quite a few veteran players on their team, so. I put them second. Abilene Christian third. Like I said, the weak schedule bothers me about them. Lamar fourth. Really good at offensive rebounds and getting to the line. Getting those extra chances has been helping Lamar a lot. Stephen F. Austin, the preseason favorite next. I think they're still capable of a run, certainly. You know, I wouldn't put it past this team to make a run through the conference tournament because they've done it so many times. Now, usually they're better than what they are this year. So not something I'm predicting, but they certainly have a chance. Then I'd go New Orleans, Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, Houston Baptist, Central Arkansas. And in my notes, I put Central Arkansas played a really tough non-conference. So that has them, you know, more prepared. And I think they're capable of beating top teams. But they haven't shown the consistency that they need to have. Nicholls State after that, Northwestern State, McNeese State, and Incarnate Word, clearly the worst team in this league.
Yeah, and again, this is definitely a conference that up until this year wasn't traditionally lined in the regular season, will be a one-bid league here, and doesn't seem to have. I mean, maybe Sam Houston State can be like a Stephen F. Austin, but Stephen F. Austin was so good offensively under Brad Underwood that they were a dangerous March Madness team. I don't think we've got one of those upset caliber teams here, do you?
No, I don't. I think that Sam Houston State's been a good story. It would really surprise me if they were the upset story. If you look at their non-conference slate, you know, they didn't fare very well in the non-conference. They lost by 15 at Clemson. Now, Clemson's a good team, obviously. They lost by 14 to East Tennessee State, who's a quality mid-major team. But, you know, if you're going on the road and losing by 14 to East Tennessee State, and then you back it up going on the road and lose to Little Rock 79-52. Against a big-name team, you're probably going to be in trouble.
So as we look at our conference breakdowns here, we've got three conferences left to go. So that'll take up our second segment here later this week and then our two segments next week. We've got to cover the America East, the Northeast Conference, and then the MEAC. So, three real heavy hitters there the rest of the way. But, once we get through that, we'll be close to conference tournaments and everything. So, you'll have a good idea of what to expect from these teams. Won't be, just flying blind when we talk about these conference tournaments. And that's really what I wanted to achieve here with these conference-by-conference breakdowns. So, Kyle, as we transition to our regression teams here, got to give you a pat on the back for the Ohio State offense one. What, they have 13 points in the second half against Michigan State?
Yeah, it was interesting because I turned the game on. It was 39-39. And I told my wife and my son, hey, we're going to watch the end of this Buckeyes game. And it was kind of a battle because they wanted to put on Netflix and watch a movie. And after a little while, I said, let's put on Netflix and watch a movie. It was getting that bad. Ohio State scored, I think they made one shot from the eight-minute mark on from the floor. So, I mean, Ohio State is really not very good. I'll be a little bit surprised if they end up making the NCAA tournament. Maybe they do and they get in as one of the last teams or something, but they're really not very good. They're a well-coached team. They don't have many ball handlers. They don't have that many really good scoring options. And those are two pretty big problems. So Ohio State has been struggling here of late, and I would expect that to continue. I think they're capable of pulling an upset, but they're not that good of a team.
Well, and a lot of these regression candidates and the follow fade things have been very, very strong here on the shows over the last several weeks. So definitely make sure you pay attention to this segment as we start with a negative regression team out in the Big West.
Yeah, UC Riverside, the Highlanders. UC Riverside plays a really, really interesting style in that they play extremely slowly. They are using up 21 seconds of the possession of the shot clock on average. So they're shooting it at 9 seconds on the shot clock as average. Really, really long possession length there. You don't find many teams at all in the country that use it up that much. That's Virginia-type pace right there. Now, what they don't have is Virginia-style defense by any means. So UC Riverside, though, they've been winning some games and covering some numbers here of late because they're shooting so well from three-point range. They're shooting 41% from three-point range in the conference slate. They shot 32.3% in Big West games last year. If you look at who they play the rest of the year, they only really play one really bad Big West defense the rest of the regular season. That's Cal State Northridge. I want to go against or take unders with this team. They're playing that slowly. They're bound to miss some more shots here at some point. I don't think they can keep shooting 41% from three-point range. So look to try to find spots to either go against UC Riverside or take some unders.
All right, so as we transition over to the positive regression side here, got a team from the sixth major conference, I guess we'll say, in college basketball, the Big East.
Yeah, Providence, their defense, and I'm up to one main area here being it really stands out like a sore thumb. Providence in conference action is giving up 80.3% from the free throw line, if you want to call it quote-unquote free throw defense. This is the single best area to look for regression, in my opinion, because, somebody's way out of whack when it comes to free throw defense. This is not something that should continue. You're not going to keep giving up that kind of percentage long term, and you find a team that's giving up 55 or 60% from the free throw line. That can't keep going either. I know some of these places have a tougher backdrop where the student section is a little crazy. So if you look at past years and you see that somebody's holding opponents to a lower number than normal, then it's fair to assume that maybe they've got a little bit different setup that will make it more difficult. But Providence is a pretty good defense that forces a lot of turnovers. They change up their defense a lot. Cooley's always been known for that, switch around between zone and man-to-man. They'll use a press once in a while. A pretty good defense here in this league. The Big East has a lot of good offenses. So certainly they've faced some good offenses, and I think that it's just, you know, something we should point out when somebody's shooting 80.3% against them from the free throw line. That's not numbers that can keep going.
All right, so as we look at our follow and fade teams here, some of these are short-term looks, some of these are long-term looks, and sort of feels like, you know, this first one's a little bit of maybe a medium-term look as we look at the Mo Valley.
Yeah, I'm going to talk here about Illinois State. If you follow Illinois State, you probably understand why things have fallen off for them. Illinois State had two games here in the conference slate that they've lost by half-court buzzer beater. The most recent one against Missouri State on February 10th, Missouri State picks up that loose ball at half court, chucks it from half court, and it banks in. They lose 66-65. It happened earlier this year at Valpo. After that loss to Missouri State, they had a couple of really poor performances here against Northern Iowa and Bradley. I don't think that's a surprise. You know, I mean, when you lose that way, it's really hard to bounce back. In the long term, this Illinois State team is clearly better than a 14-13 team, or at least better than a 7-7 team in the league. You know, for a while, it was looking like they were probably the second best team in the league. I don't know that they're the second best team in the league, but I think that you're going to find some values on Illinois State here going forward. I would say there's kind of a medium term one. You've got Indiana State here on Wednesday on the road. Indiana State's one of the weakest teams in this league, but you know, in the Missouri Valley, home court certainly worth quite a bit. Then you play Drake, a team that's been surprising so far this year, but I think Illinois State probably has more talent than they do. Then you play Missouri State in what's a good revenge spot, and then they finish it out with Southern Illinois.
So Illinois State, probably a team we'll talk about as we get closer to Arch Madness for the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. How about the fade team here as we take a look at the MAAC?
I think I like this one a little bit better. Quinnipiac off the triple overtime win. They host Iona, a team that beat them by one, or the team that they beat by one on the road. And then they go to Monmouth. Monmouth, they beat in double overtime earlier this year. I mean, when you win a triple overtime game, and that was just, what was it, yesterday, I think? It was either Saturday or Sunday. But when you lose a game like that, it's going to be hard to put that kind of effort in again. It was just yesterday on Sunday, 107-100 at triple overtime. I will point out also, they beat Ryder in overtime this past Tuesday. So they've played four overtime sessions here in the last 5 days. You know, this team has been really busy. They're not a really deep team. And Cam Young is a tremendous player for Quinnipiac, and he put up some massive numbers on Sunday. But I think these are bad spots for them here. Tuesday, a really quick turnaround against Iona. Think about playing a Sunday game in triple overtime and then turning around and playing on Tuesday at home against a team that's looking for road revenge. And then you go to Monmouth, a team that you beat in double overtime at home. So this is more of a short-term look, but I think that may be a good idea to look for some value against Quinnipiac.
All right, so we take a look at some games here for this week, and we start on Tuesday night in the Big Ten, Maryland taking on Iowa. This looks like a real high-quality matchup.
Yeah, I want to talk about this game because Iowa's been really fortunate to win the last couple of games. If you haven't followed it closely, Iowa's made long threes right as the buzzer goes off to win two games in a row. They beat Northwestern at home 80-79, a game that they certainly should have lost. Northwestern really buttoned it up and then turned it over a lot there at the end of that game. Then they beat Rutgers on the road 71-69 on Saturday. If you didn't see it already, you should check out that clip to see how the last play of the game went in that one. Iowa throws it all the way up court from the side. From the side court, they bank it in, clearly not tried to bank in. It banks off the side of the backboard, just barely even hits the backboard, and then just skiffs right in. So really a fortunate win for Iowa there. Iowa's a good team. They're much better than people thought they were going to be. They're 20-5 this year. But Iowa has had some good fortune here of late. They're going to need to play better than what they have the last couple games if they're going to win some of these games down the stretch when they're playing Maryland, they're playing at Wisconsin, games like that. You know, this Iowa team, to me, is really good on offense. Their defense is pretty questionable, and they've been able to get away with that defense not being that great most of the season. I will tell you, I think Maryland's a better team than Iowa. The problem for Maryland is they never win on the road in these big games. Mark Turgeon's teams have not been doing anything on the road against big-name teams. I think there's some kind of stat about top 25 teams they've played on the road, and it's been years since they've picked up a big win there on the road under Mark Turgeon. So I think that Maryland's team's better. I think they have more talent. I really like Maryland's front court. You know, they've got some really talented guys in the front court. Bruno Fernandez, a really good player as a sophomore. Jalen Smith, a freshman, very good player. They have some really solid talent at Maryland. I think that they're a dangerous team. The one problem that they have is they turn the ball over the second most in the league. Ohio State, the only team in the league that turns it over more than Maryland does. So if Maryland can control the turnovers here, keep them to a minimum, I think Maryland can win on the inside, you know, in the front court. What's this line going to be? You know, Maryland's probably going to be a slight underdog, maybe Iowa -1.5, -2, something like that. If you can get some points, you know, you can get 2, 2.5 points. I would lean toward Maryland in this game. It's been hard for them to win these types of games. They have had quite a few close ones, though. I think this game projects as a close game, and I do like Maryland's front court advantage here over Iowa. So I think Iowa's been living on the edge here of late. If they don't play better, I think they'll lose this game.
We transition from the Big Ten over to the MAC as we head down to Oxford, Ohio, for this game on Tuesday night. Ball State and Miami of Ohio. What stands out about this one, Kyle?
Well, the thing that stands out about this game to me is that Ball State is a lot better than their record would suggest, or that at least they should be a much better team than 5-7 in the league. Ball State, a team that, you know, has had some success in past years. They were 19-13 last year. They had a road win over Notre Dame last season. Now this year, they come into the league play. They beat Toledo in the first game on the road by 15 points, and they just completely fall apart. They lose like 7 of their next 8 games. They've won their last 3, 2 of them by 1 point. You know, are they turning a corner here? It looks like they're playing better than they were. Miami of Ohio went to Ball State and beat them 71-65 earlier this year. I think this is certainly a good road revenge chance here. Miami coming off an overtime loss on the road on Saturday. This sets up as a good spot for Ball State. You know, if Ball State can't win in a spot like this, it's going to tell us a lot about Ball State as a team that they still really haven't put it together. So certainly my lean in this game is Ball State. I think that, you know, maybe +1.5 or +2 points is what you get here. I think there's a good chance Ball State wins this game. They've already won on the road several times. If you look at, they beat Valpo on the road, a pretty good team. They beat Loyola Chicago on the road by 6 points, certainly a good team. They beat Central Michigan on the road, a pretty decent team. Like I said, they beat Toledo on the road. Then they beat Northern Illinois on the road. So they certainly can win on the road. Miami of Ohio, just a kind of a middle-of-the-pack type team. They've played pretty decent here of late, and they've done pretty well at home, but they have lost to some teams that are not as good as Ball State. So I think the spot indicates a good look toward Ball State here.
We move over to Wednesday, and anytime North Carolina and Duke play, it's going to grab headlines. And obviously, I mean, we have to talk about a game like this. I know we love to talk about under the radar types of games, all that type of stuff. And of course we will finish out the segment with one, but there's not a whole lot better in college basketball than North Carolina versus Duke.
No, this is a great rivalry. You know, I'm not necessarily a fan of either team, but I love watching these games. You know, I don't root for any team over the other between these two teams, but I love watching these games. I love the intensity. You know, it's a great college basketball. I think there's a few keys in this game. North Carolina's offensive rebounding, you know, they weren't quite as good for a good while into the season at offensive rebounding this year as what they had been. And here recently, they've been very good on the offensive glass. Duke, can they keep them off the boards? Because Duke's defensive rebounding has been not that good this year. They've been very good on the offensive glass, but defensively not that good. You know, how many times is North Carolina going to get second chance opportunities? And then North Carolina, can they be better on defense and more consistent on defense? Duke's certainly the more balanced team here. You have to say Duke has more talent than does North Carolina, but North Carolina is certainly not short on talent. Duke's a very inexperienced team, really, really talented, very inexperienced. I wonder what that means in a game like this because, you know, North Carolina has quite a few more experienced players playing in key roles than does Duke. Those guys kind of know what this rivalry is all about. I think I'd be cautious delaying too many points here with Duke in a game like this because of that, because, you know, I mean, they've played a lot of games this year. It's not like they're newbies at this point, but, you know, this is the first time they played North Carolina. And, you know, you can read about it. You can hear other people talk about it, but playing in the first game against them, you know, do you really want to lay a lot of points with an inexperienced team? I don't think I do. You know, I think this is a game that has a lot of variance, though. You know, it's not going to shock me if Duke wins by 25 points. It also wouldn't surprise me if it's a really close game. So I think this is a better one to watch from a fan standpoint, but I'll be keying in on those areas that I talked about as far as the weaknesses for the other team. But as I said, I do think that this is a little bit of a dangerous spot here for Duke when you have so many inexperienced players. Let's see how they step up in a big game like this.
Well, and as I'm kind of looking at this game, Bart Torvik's got North Carolina ranked 5th. KenPom's got North Carolina ranked 8th. For being a top 10 team, I feel like I have not heard anything about North Carolina this year nationally. Like they're almost an afterthought.
Yeah, I mean, compared to a normal North Carolina team, I would say you're right. You know, they had that big home loss to Louisville, and maybe people jumped ship a little bit too much on them after that game. They did come back and beat Louisville on the road by 10 points. You know, they've been inconsistent. They needed overtime to win at home against Miami. They had a poor finish there against Virginia at home in a spot that they were in the better spot there after Virginia just played Duke. You know, I don't know. I think this North Carolina team is certainly a very good team. Not as good as some of the teams that they've had, but they did have a, you know, 103-90 win over Gonzaga. And that's one of the better wins that you'll see. So North Carolina is certainly capable.
One more game to touch on here on this Handicapping the Hardwood segment. We go to the Big Sky Conference on Thursday night. Eastern Washington takes on Southern Utah.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting spot. This one will show up in my situational spots article at bangthebook.com. I would expect that, you know, this will be one of them that I like the most. I'm not totally done with the spots throughout the week, but I've gotten through Thursday's games, and I think this is one of the better spots of the week. Eastern Washington, this is their third game since this past Saturday. So they're really busy scheduling-wise. Southern Utah, the fresher team here, they're looking for revenge for a three-point loss in their first meeting. You know, Eastern Washington's done well at home, and when they go on the road, they've not been that good. You know, I think this Eastern Washington team is one of those teams that has some pretty severe splits, you know, home and away. And I would expect Southern Utah to win this game. Now, what's the spread going to be here? I wonder if it's going to be factored in as far as the spot a little bit. You know, KenPom has -3. It might not be that cheap. You might have to lay more than 3 points here with Southern Utah. And if it gets much more than -3, then I might be out of this one. I will say that I think that Todd Simon's done a pretty good job with the Southern Utah program. If you look back a couple of years ago, this team was 6-24, then 6-27, then they go to 13-19, and here they are at 12-12. So much improved from what they were a few years ago. And this is a team that doesn't have that much experience on it this year, so it's not necessarily that they've had the same guys and they've gotten a lot better. They've just started recruiting better. They're getting better players. So Southern Utah on the upswing, and they've been pretty good at home this year too. They've lost a bunch of games on the road in the conference, but I think this spot certainly favors Southern Utah, and I'll be curious to see what kind of line you see on this game.
And, of course, definitely some altitude in play here with the Thunderbirds at home in this one, so that's another consideration for Eastern Washington. Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and daily contributor to bangthebook.com, as well as that weekly situational betting spots article. What's going on over at your website right now, man?
Well, I'm running a promotional here for college basketball totals. From now through the end of the NCAA tournament, $330 for all college basketball totals. You can contact me, Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter or Kyle at huntersportspicks.com. So far this year, 82-53 in college basketball, 66-43 in college basketball totals. I have the premium packages all up for sale there at huntersportspick.com. The all totals one, you would need to contact me, Kyle at huntersportspick.com or Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. And, you know, I've lowered the prices on all college basketball as well. Certainly has been a good run here in college basketball for me. You know, it's a sport that I spend a lot of time on. So it's one where when I do well in college basketball, it feels even better than the average sport because there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into this sport.
Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com, bangthebook.com, at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Appreciate the time, as always, man. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again later in the week.
All right. Thanks, man.